You're listening to Robert Kelly's
You Know What, Dude?
On the Glory Hole Radio Network, gloryholeradio.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Robert Kelly, and we're doing another You Know What, Dude? Podcast here in Ottawa. I got a special guest, a friend of mine, funny motherfucker, Alonzo Bowden, is doing it with me today.
I'm here opening Robert Kelly at
the beautiful
Just for Laughs.
We're co-headlining.
No, I do this show for the full audience. And then you do the show as they walk out to go to a bigger show.
To go see Soundgarden. Well, here's the deal. You're doing as much time as me.
Yeah, we do the same
opening
show.
Opening would be 20 minutes.
Yeah. No, we do the
so
same
So feel
show.
Free to fucking do 20. I have no problem with you fucking
I can't. I got to do
shutting your face at 20.
I got to do 30, 35, and then send them off to the next concert.
It's a weird gig. This is Just for Laughs, but it's the Blues Fest. And they come up here and they put a show up here just to represent a little bit. And this show we're doing is a relationship theme show. And it's me. It's basically two headliners on the show. And I don't know how I got. Usually you flip flop when that happens.
Yeah, but they already made the tape.
Yeah, they made some tape.
The whole show is based on the fact that somebody made an intro tape that says my name first.
I'm sure there's another tape with your name fucking second. I don't give a shit, though. You know, that shit used to actually freak me out back in the day, but now being in New York so long, having to go up after fucking Norton and Quinn and, you know, Chris Rock stops by and, you know, every single Wayne's brother.
Right. It's like showcase shows. You never know who you're going to be following.
Yeah.
Or, this isn't a case of opening. It's just, it's actually funny because this is a spot where, you know, the guy who goes second, you get more shit than I do going first, because when I go on, there's nothing else going on, so everybody's
well,
there.
Yeah, just to explain it to you guys, that there's a huge blues festival going on. So there's, like, you know, five stages, two huge stages. So, and when you buy a ticket to this blues festival, you don't buy individual shows. You buy one ticket, gets you into any show, anytime, anywhere. So you can bop in and out of that show, go over and see the Roots, go over and see somebody else, then you can go to the comedy show. So what happens is that our show starts at 7:30. Usually the main event shows start at 8. So we'll start the show right on time. You'll go on, do your 30, 35. And now when you're bringing me up, that's when those main event shows are starting, like Soundgarden.
Yeah, that's when the guy with the two hot daughters decide, oh, we got to go see the Roots.
Well, last night wasn't as bad as the first night. The first night, I didn't know what was happening. I thought I was just offending people. I thought people were walking out offended, and I came off. I was like, you know, I was expecting to get fucking a ration of shit. And they were like, no, they're just fucking leaving to go see Soundgarden. Started at 8.
Yeah.
So they were just taking off. Which is still sucks. It's like, you know, I'm not captivating enough to make you wait 15 minutes to see Soundgarden.
to stand in the back of a field and see Soundgarden, I mean.
Yeah, you have
but
third row seat.
But the upside is, after the show, you got to see Soundgarden.
Yes.
Right? And I got to see Bootsy Collins. So that's a good gig.
Who the fuck is Bootsy Collins?
Bootsy is P-Funk, man. Parliament. This goes back to the 70s. The P-Funk All-Stars. Bootsy was a...
Oh, I know I don't know. Because I was a fucking 5.
Well, yeah.
And I'm not black.
Yeah, those two things would get in the way.
Yeah, of me knowing who Bootsy is.
Bootsy was a hell of a party, though. It was fun. Bootsy put on a good show.
I got to look him up now. Was he... So it's funk?
Yeah, it's funk.
So I tell you what, Soundgarden, Chris Cornell was fucking amazing.
Yeah, well, that looked like, I mean, that was the big show. I think it's probably the biggest show this week.
He was fucking great. He was just, he's captivating. Yeah. I would have left me. I would have left me 15 minutes early. I actually wouldn't have showed up to me. I would have just went to Soundgarden and got better seats.
Well, we actually could have done that. We were talking about this yesterday. If we didn't show up to do the show, people would just assume it was canceled and keep on going. Like, we wouldn't have gotten in trouble. Nobody would have really noticed.
Nobody cares.
There was no comedy show. That even Simon, our tour manager, said, listen, you guys are just filler.
Yeah, we
right?
are.
When, that's bad when the tour manager explains to you, look, you're just filler. You're something to do from 7:30 to 8 while we move people from one stage to another.
It's true. But you know how you know that, too, is because they're all gone. All the Just for Laughs people showed up on the first day.
Nobody here.
And they're gone. Then they replaced us with, like, old people.
Yeah,
they
replaced with a local guy who probably doesn't even know what comedy is. He just kind of looked at us like, okay, these are the two guys I give the passes to.
Right.
And then I'm going to watch Soundgarden.
And make sure the fat one gets to have his cigarettes and the black one gets to go see Bootsy or whatever funk band is playing. So let's just back up a little bit. I mean, everybody knows who you are, but, you know, I know you from two different... I know you from back in the day.
Yeah.
And then, most people know you from Last Comic Standing.
Right.
Which, you know, is such a corporate show. It's a NBC network hit show, especially when you were on it. It was at its peak. It's so funny because I remember you as such a not industry guy. I remember going, you know,
I was angry.
I would go to Dublin's. And Dublin's, if you guys don't know, it's a bar on fucking
Irish
Sunset.
Bar on Sunset,
and Jay Davis used to run a room there, and it was probably one of the hottest comedy rooms.
Yeah, it definitely was
in the country, I would say. I mean,
yeah,
you'd go there any given night, and it was sold out all the time. But there was famous people in the crowd all the time.
Yeah,
and there was certain comics that worked there every Wednesday night. Every Wednesday, there were certain guys, and you were one of them.
Yeah.
Dane Cook was the other. You were staples.
Yeah,
you guys would close the show, mainly you. Or Dane, but mainly you. You'd go up after Dane. I remember going there, and I was all fucked up. I was excited, didn't know anybody, and you know, I was from New York, and I was Dane's friend and all that shit. But that, you know, that gets you so far. This was before Dane hit too. This was before Dane.
It was
exploded.
While Dane was hitting, and that was the weird thing because it almost seemed like 1 week you were like, "Where are you going this week?" And I'm like, "I'm going to the Kansas City Chuckle Hut, and Dane's going to the Improv in Fort Lauderdale or something." Then 2 weeks later, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the Improv in Dallas. Dane's going to Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
It literally seemed like that. Like, holy, what just happened? You know?
It was fun.
But the
crazy part about it is you would go up after Dane, and I remember it was this packed crowd, rowdy fucking people, L.A., good-looking cocksuckers, industry. And you go up after Dane, would flip the fuck out, climb the walls, jump on the furniture, fucking slap people's faces literally in the crowd. You know, crazy. Kill it. And you'd go up with that deep fucking voice, and you'd sit down.
Sit down on a stool and just talk to them. Sometimes I'd have an idea what I was going to talk about. Other times I had no idea, and I would just mine the crowd and look for an idea, something to talk about and make funny. But it was great for me. For me personally, like we were saying, it's the most creative time of my career. Because
right.
It was literally because I knew I'd be there every week. So a lot of people came in and did their act. But like, I'm not going to do my act every week for the same audience. That's ridiculous. So it was always new shit. And the thing with Dane was the other thing that was going on with Dane was you had all the imitators. Right. Everybody wanted to be Dane, like they knew he was on to something. So you had a bunch of guys
steal his essence.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And the last thing I'm going to try to do is out energy Dane Cook. You know what I mean? Because like you said, I mean, literally when he's climbing on furniture, jumping on tables and doing everything that he did, I'm not going to top that. So my shit was, it was in a completely different direction. Let's sit down, let's talk, see where it goes. And I didn't have to be bigger than Dane. Like, I was never under
pressure. Fuck all that. Fuck all that analytical shit. What you used to do that was amazing to me, as especially coming from New York, and you know, there's no industry in New York. You do a show in New York, you can guarantee nothing's going to happen. Okay, it's just about the stand-up. It's just about being funny and evolving as a comic in New York. But L.A., especially at this show, you never know who the fuck was in the crowd. I mean, directors. And Jay Davis used to get some famous people in there.
Yeah.
And you used to fucking trash them. You'd go up and take a hot one after Dane. You didn't give a shit.
I didn't give a shit.
And you'd look right at a fucking movie producer and be like, well, fucking put me, put me in your movie.
Yeah.
The fuck you. I don't care. You ain't doing shit for me.
Listen, you know why? Because a movie producer at Dublin's was there to get some pussy. He was there to show some young chick his business card.
Right.
That he was a producer. And usually he wasn't a producer, right? That card came from Kinko's.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought of being disguised. I'll tell you the funniest thing, though. My funniest experience with industry was the guy who wrote this movie called Juana Man, which was a movie about a guy playing in the WNBA. Like, this guy pretended to be a woman and play in the WNBA. Well, the guy who wrote that movie, whatever, he was at Dublin's, and I happened to be going off on the Clippers one week. I'm just cracking on the Clippers and all this shit. So he wanted to use my stuff and maybe use me in this movie. It's when he was writing it. So he calls William Morris, who I was with at the time. And I had told my agents about this show. You know, we got this thing going on at Dublin's. It's real hot, blah, blah, blah. They never showed up. So when they heard from this director or writer, then the agents from William Morris all show up. But they don't understand the vibe. They think it's like being at the Improv or the Laugh Factory, that it's industry night, that they're gonna get a table and be treated special and blah. You know what they? And it was like, no, man, this is a fucking bar. This is where we work out. So I cracked on William Morris. I said, oh shit, my agent showed up. I must owe him money, you know. And I made a joke about owing him $100. And I get a call from my manager the next day. She's like, there are 2 days that your name was on every desk at William Morris. When they signed you in Montreal, and this morning when they dropped you.
Ah, you got fucking douched.
I got dropped for making fun of him, but I don't give a shit. It was funny.
That's fucking stupid. William Morris used to be the big mother on the... Where are they? I don't even hear their name anymore.
You know, they're still there. It was like... Well, you know how it is. You know, when you're new and you get approached by one of the big agencies, you're like, oh shit, I'm going to be a star, this or that.
Yeah.
And they use you for whatever they can get. And if they can develop you, they will. But they're not putting a lot of effort into it. They're like taking a shot. And if it doesn't stick, then you just become another picture on the shelf.
Well, you know what else they do? I actually signed with Gersh my first month in New York City. I booked the first 3 things that they sent me out on.
Yeah, so you were hot.
Well, I booked a TV show for Lorne Michaels and Viacom or whatever the fuck it was, or as a host on this show, like almost like an MTV spinoff College Network. I booked 2 movies, and I was on fire. I get a call from my agent. She's leaving the business to go be in a punk band. This bitch had a corner office. Okay, she was in my corner. I have to go meet with the whole agency now to sit down with them to see if somebody else wants to pick me up.
Right.
We meet with them, and I'm in there trying to sell myself to these people that fuck you. I should have said no.
Yeah.
I actually in there, and I actually used the word dramatical. I go, I want to do comedies, but I want to do dramatical stuff too. And I heard my managers, he just went, oh.
How do they not sign a man who wants to be dramatical?
Fucking dump me. We walk out of the meeting, he goes, dramatical? It's not even a fucking word, right?
Well,
so then they kept a guy who's, this guy's never booked a thing. Still to this day, haven't seen him on TV. Not one fucking thing. Guy hasn't booked anything in fucking 10 years. They douche me.
But he did not say dramatical.
That's right. Fucking dramatical. God damn it.
My thing was, they got me when I did New Faces in Montreal. This was what, 97? Yeah, and I was the guy that year. And this is when they still made deals in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
So I do my set and everybody's going crazy. And I got the full court press from William Morris. Like, for the rest of the week, there was always someone from William Morris nearby. Like if I was at the bar and I wanted a drink, William Morris was there to buy it. If I was walking out of the hotel in the morning to go to breakfast, William Morris happened to be there, you know?
Wow.
And so I came back to L.A. I signed with them. They got me a deal. It was good money, too. It was great.
You and got a deal?
I got a deal.
With who?
And with Greenblatt Gianellari.
All right, so stop right now. So a lot of these people don't understand this. That, you know, comics, not really now, but back in the day, there was a time, late 90s, early 2000s, where if you did one of these festivals, especially in Montreal, all the industry would go. Everybody would go. And comics would get a deal. And when they say a deal, they would a network, a holding deal or a development deal. Holding deal means we want you for a year, and because we don't want you going anywhere else. We don't want you. And a development deal means we're going to try to develop a show around you. And usually it's a truckload of money, a good chunk of change, had to be in the six figures.
Yeah.
Okay. And nothing happens.
Exactly how it played. I mean, it blew my mind. Like, I did my set, and my manager came up to me afterwards, because at that time when they did New Faces, the audience was downstairs, and they had a balcony upstairs, and that's when the industry was. And he said, everybody was talking about you. He's like, you're about to make a ton of fucking money. And he said, the key word is ton of fucking.
Right. You know?
So I come back to L.A., and it's overwhelming, right, because I'd only been doing comedy like 4 years. I'm on New Faces. So these people are coming at you. I'm from CBS. I'm from NBC. I'm from here. And I'm like, fuck, you know. So I get the deal with Greenblatt Gianellari. And, yeah, the money was good. And Titus had been the hot guy the year before.
Right.
So Titus came up to me. He said, look, this is going to be your learning deal. No, his was like 3 or 4 years before. This was the year his actual TV show was coming out.
Who I don't get, by the way. And I've never fucking... This guy is a multimillionaire, probably.
Yeah, he is.
And he's had fucking deal after deal. He looks like Max Headroom. And I don't get... Not that he's not funny or he's funny. I'm not saying... I've never really seen his stand-up. But this guy is a multimillionaire... And I've never seen him. He's not a household name.
No, but he works his ass off. And he came up to me and he said, look, this is going to be a learning deal. You're going to learn how Hollywood works. And they're going to let you keep the money. He said, then the next deal is when you're going to come up with a TV show.
Right.
Because when I got it, I didn't know that I was supposed to come up with the idea for the TV show. That's how fucking naive I was. You know,
would you think they have shelves and they just go up
no,
and say,
I figured
tall black
with,
guy,
they put
bald.
You with somebody who knows how
and
to write
just fucking
a TV
pull it out.
Show and
here,
you
give
fucking
this one. No,
do
you talk
it.
While I talk. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I do. Well, you, I'm
fucking,
telling
you are
my
just
story.
A yapper.
I'm telling my fucking story.
I'm trying to enhance your story, shit dick. This isn't fucking NPR. This is Bob Kelly's podcast in a hotel room.
So I got the deal. I got the money. No show came out of it.
Right.
And a year later, you know, they always say they're going to renew your deal. And when they didn't renew my deal, it went from I would walk into William Morris and it'd be an assistant waiting for me, you know, water, coffee, whatever, walk up to the office. They didn't renew that deal. I could go to William Morris. I might as well be a guy who's never done comedy before. It's like, yeah, have a seat in the lobby. We'll get to you. You know, it was just... You're nobody. You're not bringing in a check to the agency. Right. You're absolutely nobody. So what happens is you lose that. You're impressed with the industry when you start. And then once you start working with it and dealing with the people and seeing how it goes, you become less and less impressed with titles and who people are. And it becomes more about what they do.
Well, first of all, let's just get this out. I've never had a deal. I've done all the festivals right when industry stopped going. I did Aspen the second to last year it ended. I did Vegas. You know, I've done them all. Montreal, you know, I do it. I've done it a lot in the last few years. Nothing. There's no more deals handed out. I've never gotten a deal. I did a showcase once at the Laugh Factory, and I got an agent, Gardner something. Exactly. And
it's always good when what's the name of your agent? Gardner, some shit. I don't even know.
Again, my agent there actually I booked a pilot first month, booked a pilot for Stu Siegel down in San Diego. Lead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Okay.
I've heard Stu Siegel.
Fucking, he calls me the first day of shooting. Yeah, I'm leaving. He left, too. He went to be a manager. So
yeah,
now I'm
right.
stuck
that's
with this other company. And I fucking, they wound up, I think I said dramatical again, and they dumped me. But the so you get this deal, but then you go and you're in this funk. You get into this fuck the business, man. Fuck the industry. I'm doing what I'm doing, and I don't care if you like me or not.
Well, because it was about stand-up and it was about creativity. Because the agency, I mean, you joke about, you know, tall black guy, whatever, but that is how the agency, how the industry works, right? The industry is everybody fits into a category, right? So you're like, you're the hot blonde, or you're the quirky, nerdy guy.
I'm glad you didn't actually say what I was. I was waiting for a fact joke.
So with me, it was like, okay, you're the big black guy, right? Yeah. But I'm not the stereotypical big black guy. I'm not angry. I'm not from the hood.
Right.
So they don't know what to do with me. They're like, well, we don't know what fucking category to put this guy in because he looks like this,
right.
but he talks like that.
Right.
So I couldn't get shit. I couldn't get anything, you know. It wasn't happening. So I was like, look, fuck it. I'm just going to do what I do. And I was beyond the new stage. In other words, it wasn't like I was a new face that somebody was going to discover. So, you know, and it was funny the other day when you said I was bitter, because I don't think I was bitter as much as I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to do what I do. I can't be what they want me to be.
I think when a comic really becomes a comic, when you really get this business, is when you realize it doesn't matter.
Right.
None of the shit matters.
You stop caring.
You stop caring. You don't give a fuck. It's not like you're a dick. You don't treat people like shit. You don't fuck you or fuck the industry. Or you know, you're angry or bitter and you hate people, which that phase does happen. But when you phase out of that and you realize it doesn't matter. It's the work. It's what I do. It's what I want to do. It's the little goals I set for myself, whether it's doing an hour on Showtime or being a working comedian on the road or getting a TV deal, you know, getting a show
right.
on the air. You realize it doesn't matter. You don't have to give a fuck. This guy that you meet now, who's the top guy, will be out of the business in 6 months. Fucking in a punk band. You know what I mean? All that shit doesn't matter. So
right.
that was at the stage where I met you, but it was phenomenal to me because, to be honest, in my head, I'm saying, here's this fucking dude. He doesn't give a fuck. And I admired that because I cared. When I went to Dublin's, I cared and I didn't want to care. And
yeah.
I would see you go up and do this, not give a fuck shit. And, you know, I would go up and care. And I killed. But sometimes I had okay shows. I never bombed at Dublin's, but I walked off there feeling guilty sometimes. Like, I cared. I wanted to make you laugh.
But the funny thing about that was you're a New York comic, and New York comics really are like the most fearless, as far as you'll go on stage and do whatever. Like, L.A. comics want the TV show, so the act is the audition.
Right.
And New York comics, and the thing I love about comedy in New York, you really don't give a shit what they talk about as long as it's funny.
Right.
There's no, you know, there's no set parameters.
Right.
There's no, this is going to offend people.
Right.
Or don't say this. And you had that New York edge, and you didn't like L.A. That's
no.
what I remember. You just didn't like L.A. You didn't like the scene.
No.
I
was just getting sick
of it. You just wanted to do comedy. You just like where do we, your thing was kind of like, okay, where do you do stand up without the bullshit?
And it right? didn't exist.
And it doesn't exist in LA.
I got sick of introducing myself to the same person five times. You'd have a conversation about being molested with this guy and bond with him. And then he'd see you the next time, he'd ignore you. And then he'd look at you. Do I know you? Yeah, you know me, motherfucker. If I know you, you know me.
Yeah.
That's my rule.
Yeah.
Because I forget everybody. I have a lousy memory.
But that's why I wasn't impressed by the industry at Dublin's. Because what I've learned is the people who are actually doing shit don't have time to hang out at Dublin's.
Nope.
They're too busy doing nope. shit.
They don't you're absolutely right. But the other thing that was was crazy for me was then cut to, you know, I went and did Torgasm, and all of a sudden I look... you know, I look at you, and you're on fucking national TV. When you got, when I saw your audition for Last Comic Standing, I was like, oh boy, he's gonna fucking snap on these people. Because I remember you at Dumblets, and I'm like, oh shit, he's gonna fucking say. And then you got picked.
Yeah.
And then you made it again. And then you made it again. And I'm like, oh my fucking, this cocksucker is in the show. This guy could, Alonzo might fucking win this thing. He's in the fucking show. I forget what you came in. Did you?
Came in out of L.A. And
what place did you came in?
I was runner up.
You were runner up
on season two. It came down to me, Heffron, and Gullman. And you know, it's eliminated 3-2-1. So Gullman went first, then me, then Heff. And I'll tell you, the weirdest thing is being second on a reality show. In a way, it's the worst fucking thing because the three of us are standing on stage, right? So first they say, you know, third place, Gary Gullman, right? And everybody just fucking cheers and goes crazy, and he thanks everybody and walks off. And then it's like, and the winner is, you know, because they can't say second place because you'll know who the winner is. So they go third place, then they announce the winner, who's Heffron. And then I'm just kind of fucking standing there. And Jay Moore just shakes your hand and like, all right, beat it. Come on. We got
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Oh, it's fucking
awkward. You don't even get a fucking goodbye.
No, you don't get a goodbye. You just kind of ease off into the scenery.
Oh, shit. <You know? laughs> That fucking blows, man.
Oh, it was a fucking hilarious moment. But,
so you get on the show, and I couldn't fucking believe that.
Well, what it was, I mean, and a lot of it was material created at Dublin's, but I always did stand up, and Dublin's was like my free, like I say, that was just a place. Like if you're a musician, that's the jam session, right? You do the concert on the weekends, and then you go to the jam session, like you know, you, like those musicians in Vegas that got to play fucking 70s hits in the lounge to make a living, but you know there's somewhere they go where they just play music.
Yeah, like the Cellar is in New York. You know, during the week, you're fucking off and you're doing your shit, trying your new jokes, and then on the weekends or when you go away, you're doing your set.
Right, so when I got on TV, I'm doing my set, and everybody who knew me from Dublin's was like, I didn't know you could do that. You do that kind of comedy too? Like to them it was such a completely like you. They saw it as such a completely different thing than what I did. People didn't realize I could do it. But
I knew
how to work it. And the other thing was I had been in a lot of comedy contests. Like, you know, I did like Star Search. I did a thing called The Next Big Star that was on cable. I won that. And when you do contests, you learn how to break up your act into 1 minute chunks.
Right.
So when they say, you know, this, like your initial audition was like 90 seconds.
Right.
But I knew how to get, you know, five jokes in 90 seconds. You know what I mean? And then when you do the 4 minute thing, I knew how to do 4 minutes. Because all it is doing highlight reels of your act.
Right.
Just putting the best jokes together in a short period of time. Mm. And I was lucky that I had done that enough that when I got on the big stage, I knew how to do it.
Now, did they have writers? Did they help you at all?
I always thought that. Well, some comics had people help them, and it was weird because it never even occurred to me to do that.
Really?
You know, but some comics were like, yeah, so-and-so helped me write this, so-and-so helped me with that.
So as you get further in the competition, there was help for certain guys, like to, you know, look, because you have to do standards and practice and all that shit.
Yeah, in other words, it would be like, if I wanted to run some jokes by you and another friend, I could do that. I mean, the show never provided. There wasn't anything official, but some people had friends help them. You know, other than when, but I did it also when we had to live together, when we were like isolated for 3 weeks.
What was the worst part about being on that show?
Fighting the producers.
What do you mean fighting the producers?
The producers wanted it to be a reality show where we'd argue and fight and this and that. Like Kathleen put it best when we got into an argument with him and she said, look, this show isn't fuck, fight, or walk. You know what I mean? This isn't the real world. We're comics. We want to do comedy.
Right.
But they wanted fights and arguments and shit like that. So they would literally manipulate the truth and do shit to try to make you fight. And it worked with some people. Some people love that drama. Obviously, Ant loves that kind of drama. And
Ant. Oh, Ant the comic.
Ant the comic, yeah.
Now he's got his hair now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking
and
I love Hollywood. You can literally go from being bald to having beautiful hair and nobody says anything.
Nobody mentions a word.
Nobody mentions a fucking word.
I give you an example, and this was the funniest example because we're friends and we respect each other, me and Kathleen Madigan, right?
Love her.
They come up to me and they say, "Do you think you can win the show?" Right? And I'm like, "Well, fuck, of course I think I, you know, like, why would I be here if I didn't think I could win? Yeah, I think I could win." And then they literally go to Kathleen and say, "You know, Alonzo just said he's a much better comic than you."
They said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what she said?
She laughed because she knew it too. You know what I mean? She knew how they're going to twist up. But it's like, you know, you're really not going to get a fight going between me and Kathleen Madigan.
Right. Well Kathleen would fight with somebody. Let's not get
Kathleen. Oh, she would, but, yeah, you know, Kathleen's not like that. But that, so that was the toughest part of the show, dealing with them trying to stir up shit.
Right.
You know, and the most nerve wracking part of the show is waiting to perform. Because you don't get to see the other guy. You don't get to see whoever you're performing against.
Well, that's actually better.
It's better, but it's all. But what happens is you come on stage as they're going off, so all you hear is their final applause.
Right.
You know, and right. you're like, oh, shit, he killed. They love him.
Now, you get paid to be on that show, like a weekly stipend or SAG bullshit.
Right.
But do you get paid for being a runner-up?
No.
You get nothing.
You get nothing. But you know who got screwed on that? Heffron did for winning season 2.
Why?
Because when he won, it paid $50,000, but they deducted the money they paid you week to week.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so we were getting, I don't know what it was. It was like $1,000 or $1,200, whatever, you know, after a minimum was for a week. So they deducted the 6 weeks' pay from his $50,000 that he won.
What cunts? And that show made millions.
Millions. It was the most profitable show on NBC for the simple fact when you have 10 comics, you know what you have? You have 10 performers and 10 writers for no money.
Oh, my God.
Comics write all their own material. So there was only one writer on staff.
That's it.
Who helped Jay Moore, who helped the host write jokes. He's the only writer that they had to pay.
And Jay was a producer, too.
Yeah, Jay was producer and creator.
Now, him and Gullman got into it on the show, right?
Yeah, him and Gullman got into it. That was on season 3. That was the season I won, the best of the best.
Oh, the season 3 was?
Season 3 was when I won.
You won best of the best.
Yeah, what they did was they had the 10 comics from season 1 go up against the 10 comics from season 2.
And Rich Ross was on that, right?
Ross was on that, and Mardell was on that, and Ralphie May. You know, they brought back all the guys from the first season, brought us in from the second season. And it was kind of a, they said it was a team thing, but it was more like a round robin. But the team that had the winner each week got a bonus.
Right.
So the fact that we beat them like 4 out of 5 weeks, like the winner would be from our team, that was more bonus money. So it actually paid pretty good. But yeah, you know, Jay Moore's to fuck with all of us. To me, Jay was like he's in the fraternity and we're pledges.
Well, I mean, he is a veteran comic and he's from New York.
Yeah.
And New York comics, we bust balls.
Right. So it would always be. But the thing with Jay was if you gave it back to him, he'd back off. You know, it was literally like the bully thing. You know, like, I'm going to fuck with you. If you fuck with me, then we're cool. But if not, I'm going to keep doing it. So he kept fucking with Gary. And they were friends. But there were times when you could see it would get on Gary's nerves.
Right, yeah.
So this one particular time, Jay was fucking around. He was making fun of Dane. And, you know, Gary and Dane are good friends.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's pissing Gary off. And then it was like one of those, I don't know if he bumped into him or he bumped into Todd who bumped into him. It's just, you know, one of those things where there was physical contact.
Oh,
and,
shit.
And, it's the funny thing about Gary Gullman is, for anybody listening who's never met him, Gary's a big guy.
6'6".
He's 6'6". He's all muscle. He works out all the time. Yeah. He's got like, what, 8% body fat or some shit like that.
Played football for BC.
But people don't think about that because his personality is
nicest
not,
guy ever.
Yeah. But when you make him mad, like he grabbed Jay, and what happened was he slammed Jay into this set wall which is a fake wall, right? So the whole wall moved when he hit it. And everybody, oh, shit, like, Gary just threw Jay through a wall. And it was like, it wasn't that big. Yeah, it wasn't that big a deal, but it sounded like that big a deal.
Right.
But it was actually funny. Whenever you see a man lift another man off the ground, it's fucking funny.
Yeah, me and Gary have gotten into it a couple times.
Yeah.
We've been on the road. We've fought a couple. Never got physical.
Yeah.
I love him to death. One of my closest friends. But we've gotten into it a couple times. And the whole time you're thinking, okay, I got to take a knee out. I got to take an eyeball. I'm going to have to go the extra mile with this.
He's a big guy. He's a big guy.
I'm going to have to bite a nose off. I'm going to have to let him know that I'm willing to do something really bad to get out of this.
Yeah, that wasn't the worst experience of the show, though. The worst experience was in season two when Ant and Corey got into it on the bus. We used to have to ride this short, they thought it was funny, we rode a short school bus around place to place, and Ant and Corey got into this big fight, and basically it was black versus gay, you know, and NBC... Like, they shut down production.
Which is still going on today, by the way.
Yeah, we're still, you know.
Tracy.
They shut down
Gay
production. They brought in the sensitivity counselors.
Oh, God.
They brought in investigators to see if anyone thought that Corey was actually a physical threat to Ant or anybody
else. Are you
shitting
me?
Oh, no. It was a whole fucking thing. There were lawyers. We had to sign documents. And again, you're dealing with 10 comics, right? So, I mean, and me and Gary are friends. So the minute you start with the black versus gay thing, me and Gary started talking about, you know, well, we don't hate the gays as much as the blacks hate the Jews. And then me and Gary get into it, you know. I mean, we're just fucking with each other.
Right.
But you got a straight-laced lawyer from NBC who's freaking out because me and Gary are saying everything that you legally can never say.
right?
And the lawyer's like, I don't know. Get somebody in here. You know, it was fucking hilarious to us, you know.
Yeah, comics are the most dysfunctional assholes on the
planet.
Right,
exactly.
We're the black sheep of the fucking industry.
Well, tell him your nickname that when we first met.
Oh, God.
And this, I knew you for what, two days?
Okay, here you go. Dane Cook, when he first, before he popped, this is, he actually, you know, people say that, you know, how did Dane become famous, blah, blah, blah. One thing Dane did do is before he was famous, he would, he would create his own shit.
Yeah.
He'd write shit and spend his own money and film stuff. And, you know, he was popular by that. He put a lot of content out for his fans. And Patrice actually had the best saying. He said, Dane Cook's the first guy to ever win an Oscar for nothing. Because he was big without people knowing who he was. He had, you know, thousands of fans. But one of the things he wrote was Eight Guys.
Yeah.
It was a short film. And he hired all of us. Not hired. Asked us to all do it for free. And it was about eight guys that live in a studio apartment. And they have to leave one by one. They agree that, look, there's only room for one person, and they come up with this stupid way to do it. If you haven't seen it, it's on the internet. It's whatever. It's a little wacky. It's stupid, but well, me and you had to improv.
Right, we had to improv.
We had to smash each other a little bit.
Right.
We had to go back and forth. And you said something to me. And then what I say to you?
I don't know if what I called you Puerto Rican or something.
You called
like
me
that.
Fat Puerto Rican, I think.
And you said, shut up, brownie. I was like, did you just call me brownie?
Yeah, like, but they kept it. I think they kept it in the movie. But that your response was like, what the fuck?
I wasn't even mad. I was like, wait a minute. I think I've heard pretty much every black insult. This is new. Brownie?
Yeah, that was the creative way of saying the N-word without getting punched in the face.
It was fucking hilarious.
Brownie. That's all. Because I was just looking at you, and you're huge, and you're brown. And I'm fat, so I just put those two together. I was like, yeah, brownie.
Great.
Yeah, that was actually, if you haven't seen that, go check that out. That stupid movie that we're in. But then, you do this last Comic Standing. You go back for the second year. You win it. And, you know, dude, you're rocking and rolling, man.
Yeah, it was, that was great. The aftermath, it was literally, like you said, it was like rock stars. I mean, we went on tour. Me, Gary, and Jay London went on tour, and we sold out like 19 shows in a row. And the only reason we didn't hit 20 because they added a second show the day we got to town. Like, there wasn't enough time to sell the tickets for that. And, you know, it's you ride that wave and it's great, and you just want to figure out how to keep it going.
Right.
You know, and that's what happens in this business. So after 6 months of touring together, we each went our own separate ways. And then they brought me back as a judge on Last Comic, which kept me on TV for another year, which was great, another summer. And then you start grinding on your own.
How was that judging? I mean, you know, the one thing that when they brought the comics in to judge.
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, look, the show to me, I don't believe in competitions. I don't believe you can say one comic's better than the other, because I believe comedy's personal. I believe what this guy or this group of people think is funny, you might not think is funny. You might think this guy's funny. So it's, how can you say that these two people, these three people can judge? America can judge better because, you know, your fans get to call in if you have them. But, excuse me, it's my wife calling. God damn it. Even when she's not here, even when I do the podcast at my house, she's yapping. I'm in a different country. She still fucking gets on the podcast somehow. And then when they brought the comics in, it was a little weird to me because, like, how are these guys going to judge some of them, your friends?
Oh, it was weird. See, here's the thing. There is no absolute judge. You know, in other words, on any given day, somebody's going to be funnier than somebody else. A lot of times, it just comes down to what material you chose to do. But as a judge, I'll tell you, this is what the way it kind of went down. This is the broad strokes of it. You had 10% of the people that were absolute train wrecks. These were people who had never done comedy,
right,
who thought they could walk in and do a show. And we had anything from, you know, overweight porn stars to the office clown to,
right,
you know, a guy shows up in big red shoes and can't juggle. I mean, it was literally
the ones that producers
train wrecks.
Let in.
Right. And then 80% of the people were comics who I'd say have been doing it from two to 5 or 6 years.
Right.
They were good, but they were interchangeable. None of them stood out. They were funny. A ton of them did the same topics, you know, the usual stuff. Travel, you know, I'm from the hood, I'm poor,
right,
I'm fat, I'm
right,
this, I'm that,
you
whatever.
You just described my whole act.
You know, but it was, you know, they're just serviceable, they're just working comics, right? So that's 90% of the people.
Yeah.
Then you had 5% of the people that were fucking superstars. Just came out, knocked your socks off, easy to pick. Then the toughest 5% were the guys and the women who are good, they're great comics. You may know them, you may not know them, but how do you pick one over the other? That was always the toughest, those last few spots, because it could have been any one of them, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
you had to figure out, why would you pick this guy instead of that guy or whatever. So that part of the judging was hard.
Did you have to not pick somebody that you liked and knew?
Yeah, there were times when I didn't get the picks. Like, there were three of us, right? There's me, Ant, and Kathleen. And then Peter Engel, the exec producer, he had a heavyweight vote. And then NBC really didn't have a big, like, NBC didn't have a lot vested in it. You know, they could make a decision,
mm-hmm,
but they didn't really care. Like, that was the misimpression that a lot of people have. If misimpression, now I'm making up words.
What is the word?
You know, the mistaken impression.
No, dude, misimpressions
have.
Is fine.
All right.
People who listen to this podcast, we know. Except there's one guy, just let me just shout this out to the guy, because he wrote me a big email. He's a physicist or some fucking mathematician. You know, not everybody that listens to your podcast is stupid. All right, there's one guy who's intelligent. He's doing math problems right now listening to this. So shout out to you. But everybody else knows what you meant.
Yeah. So they think NBC rigs the show. And NBC could give a shit who wins the show. They've never done anything with a winner of the show. They've
right.
never, like, gone on and created a sitcom or you host, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or some shit like that. Like, they don't care
okay,
who wins.
Let me
they
stop
just
you,
do
right?
the
let
show.
Me just stop you before you go any further. The first season, in the second season, when they had the two judges, the guys.
Right.
I forget their name.
Bob and Ross.
Bob and Ross.
From the Tonight Show.
Fucking great guys.
Yeah.
Really cool guys. For some reason, they think I hated them. Seriously, because mm-hmm. I did it the first year or the second
yeah.
year. And they, you know, I said, you know, I thought it was all bullshit, whatever. I didn't, you know, I was, you know, being a comic, joking around, but fucking kind of bashing. They think I hate them, but I don't. They're fucking good guys. But in reality, you know, it's a show. You have to, it's produced. If there's producers around, there's being producing being done.
Right.
And they had to pick certain people that fit the mold to a show. Like you said, they had you in the house trying to cause controversy.
Right.
There was manipulation going on because you can't watch a legitimate show and just pick, hey, these are the funniest guys legitimately, but they're all the same people.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. So the manipulation was the diversity thing, for one thing. Like, you're not going to have all males. You're not going to have all white guys.
That's
or
why
all
they
black
said it's
or
fixed because it's not the funniest people per se. It's the funniest people also a cast.
Yeah, well, but you know that going in because it is a TV show. But see, but here's the thing, and a lot of people.
Yeah, but most comics didn't know
a
that.
A lot of people.
Stop. Most comics didn't know that, Alonzo. Most comics thought you go in and you're funny, and if you kill it, if you're funny, then you'll get picked.
You know who knew it? The veterans. And that's why I said the thing about the 2 to 6 years, because the guys who've been in the business like you.
Dude, let me
tell you. Okay, you've been in the business 8, 10, 12, 15
years. Let me just tell you really
quick,
a story real quick. I'm going to tell you, because Ben Bailey, who was around for years, auditioned for last, they called him, producers, Barry Katz, you got to come down and audition. He went in, he walked on stage, he said one thing, and they said no, and they said thank you, goodbye. I had to talk him into not going back into the club and fucking flipping tables.
Yeah.
He was so mad. This is Ben Bailey from Cash Cab.
Yeah, I know Ben.
2 Emmys.
I know Ben.
He was so fucking angry. They didn't even let him do his jokes. They physically looked at him and said no. They heard his voice, said no. He was going to go back. He was outside going, what the fuck? You don't fucking, they called me. I'm going I was like, dude, don't go back in there. Let it go. It's just a show. He was going to go in and fucking get arrested. So,
I can't say something about that because I know Ben, and there were times when shit like that happened.
Right.
But what I was going to say was the thing about the show. Yeah, we knew it was cast when we were going to the finals. Okay, right. When there were 6 of us going to the finals, and me and Corey Holcomb were 2 of the 6. Right, the 2 black comics on the show.
Right.
We're like, okay, listen, one of us is going to the finals.
Somebody's. Yeah, you know, not gonna be 2 blacks.
There's not gonna be 2 brothers going to the finals on NBC. One of us is going to the finals. So whichever one of us goes on, we're okay with that. You know what I mean? Like, you know how the game works, right?
There is.
But the other side of the coin was, at the time, and even now, nobody else is putting comics in prime time.
Exactly.
I mean, the worst rated episode of Last Comic Standing is bigger than, you know, a Tonight Show or a Comedy Central special as far as sheer numbers of viewers. When we peaked on season 2,
right,
when we got to the finals, we were getting 10 to 12 million viewers a week.
Right.
You're right. Not perfect, but no. Where else are you going to get a shot as a stand-up comic?
It did
for
more
that
for
many
comedy.
People to see
it. Let me tell you what that show did, and people that bitch about it, and I was one of them at the beginning. I bitched about it. That show did more for stand-up comedy. It resurged comedy again. It gave another little mini comedy boom where people went to the clubs and started seeing live comedy again. And that's where we make our money. So it did do way more for comedy. Yeah, there was a lot of egos that were crushed or hurt, or, you know, some things that people don't understand or whatever, or the funniest guys, quote unquote, didn't make it. But the guys that did make it were funny people. You know, the people that did make it were funny comics. But you got to look back at Dat Fan, who won the first year.
Right.
But that's what people have problems with, is they go, how the fuck?
You know, but you know how he won?
Middle America.
Middle America felt sorry for him. He was the underdog. You know, Ralphie, Voss, Mordal, they fucked with him the whole time.
Right.
You know, obviously Ralphie's a better comic than Dat Fan. Voss a better comic than Dat Fan.
But keep going.
But America loves an underdog.
My dead grandfather is a better comic than fucking Dat Fan.
But when America sees this Vietnamese kid doing the same jokes every week.
Right.
And, you know, and they're like, oh, they're picking on him. He's trying so hard, blah, blah, blah. It was like, you know, America decided that kid was going to win.
Right. So. That's what, but I understand it. I get it. That's where the competition, it's like, ah, fuck.
It's
but
not perfect.
If you weigh out what Last Comic Standing did for comics, it did way more good for stand-up comedy in general than it did bad.
Yeah.
Yes, that fan won. Ugh.
Yeah, purists and perfectionists were upset, but
right.
And I had a better experience than most. So right. So you know, I'm definitely.
Well, it took you out of Dublin to put you in the fucking spotlight.
Yeah, it moved me up. You know, it moved me up the food chain. So I got no problem with them. It was a good run. It was a great experience. I did a lot with the show. You know, even like when we were judges, they edited us out. And the final season, the judges were like, it was more like, you know, I don't know, Dancing with the Stars, where the judges
right.
were actually stars of the show and important to it.
Right.
You know, when we did it, 95% of what we said, they edited out.
Well, this is the thing that I went through. I was on Tourgasm. You were on that. We both had these hits, these little things that popped us into the limelight. And then the one thing, you know, we got a few more minutes left on the thing, but I want to get into a little bit is the, you know, the after, the down, when you go up the roller coaster, you know, people don't understand, especially the public, you know, the average asshole, there's always a down.
Yeah. It's for me, I see it more like plateaus.
Yeah.
So you climb up and then you sort of flatline.
Right.
And it's funny how people treat you, like even your money. It's like, so, you know, because they cut your money, right? Because you're not on TV every week, so you're not packing a place like
right.
you did.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, the budget's kind of tight and this. And I love when they say, we don't have any money. It's like, oh, no, you got money. You're just not giving it to me.
Right.
You know, you still economy. Have money. Yeah, it was the economy, you know, the recession. And but this year I did my Showtime special.
Right.
Which was great for me because that introduced a completely different comic than the guy on Last Comic Standing.
Right.
Because the Showtime special is a lot more political, a lot more opinionated, topical, whereas Last Comic Standing was just being funny. You know what I mean? So
yeah, it was NBC fucking funny.
It was TV. Funny. Yeah, it was TV funny. And this is where I'm at and what I'm doing now. So hopefully this starts to climb to the next plateau.
But the thing is that, you know, when you come down off of that, it's like, you know, you're up there. Like you said, you're having people bring you water and you're having all this stuff and the money and the shows. And then all of a sudden you come back down and the next guy's up at the top.
Yeah.
Or the other people. And you're at that plateau and... You know, now all of a sudden, you know, you're doing shows, and this is why I stress to, like, fans, you know, the fans are what make you. I love all the fans. I love everybody that comes
Absolutely.
To my show. I'll say hi to everybody. I'll take pictures. I'll do whatever you want. But if you're, you know, the fans that are fans from a distance that don't come to the show, I couldn't, it's like you guys, the fans are the important people. You know, if you guys come to the shows and you fill that room and you bring people and you fucking, you know, all, you know, that's what matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So
absolutely.
When you come down off of that, it's like all those fans that you had that were showing up, all of a sudden, it's, you know, they kind of go away a little bit because if you're not in that limelight every week, it's they, you know, out of sight, out of mind
yeah.
type shit. And it's a little hard. It was a little hard for me to deal with. It was a little hard for me to deal with to be that like successful, you know, people, you know, being nice. You know, I started getting demanding a little bit. And then when it went away, it was a little weird. It was a little humbling. It was good for me, though. I'm glad I went through it.
For me, the tough part is I'm not a big self-promotion guy. As you know, in this business, a lot of guys can sit around all day, tell you how great a comic they are, what they do. They market themselves, this right. or that.
Have a podcast.
That's not my thing. Right. So TV did that for me.
Right.
Like, you know, and it brought the fans. Like, that's what I loved about it. I didn't have to do that chasing. You know, like I was joking with you, like, you got like 35,000
right.
Twitter followers. I got like 2,000.
Well, I'll explain that to you, too, is that I'm lucky enough to be a part to be one of the guys on a really fucking O&A.
Yeah.
I'm lucky enough to be around Norton and Opie and Anthony and be on that show a lot in the last, you know, 5 years. So those fans are fucking loyal, diehard, amazing people. And, you know, there's 5% of them suck, and I hope they die because they don't like me. They just love Jim and love fucking with me. But, not, you know, 95% of them are just fucking great fans that support you. So I'm lucky to have that. That radio show has done so much for me.
Yeah. But I mean, anything like that that appeals direct to the fans.
And Dane.
Is great
Dane,
for promotion.
Those fucking tours. I did a million people. I did an arena tour. That will help with your Twitter fucking numbers.
Yeah. But it's the fans, you love them. I love working live. And it's, people are always like, wow, you're great. I think for me, the great thing is, especially like this is with club owners, and club owners will tell you they get a lot of TV acts in, and they saw them do 7 minutes on TV, and that's all they have.
That's it.
So the gratifying thing was when you go to a club that you've never been to before, and they're like, wow, you're really good. Like, and they'd be almost apologetic. Like, listen, I don't mean any disrespect, but, you know, we've seen it before, and we didn't know what to expect.
Well,
and then
you can't fill the room. If you can fill the room five shows, you'd get the money. But here's the thing is we're going in, and, okay, Thursday night's not full because I'm not on TV every week or whatever, but I'm fucking killing it.
Yeah.
When I walk out of a club, I always... That was one of the best shows we've ever seen here.
Right.
The people that know me or don't know me. And, you know, we're fucking comics.
Yeah,
we're going in
exactly.
for an hour and we're killing it.
Exactly.
You're getting a fucking show, which almost I think is like you have to suck as a comic to become famous. You know, some of these guys just stink.
Well, like I got one buddy and he says, you know, he's like, man, these audiences, they're so shocked because they haven't seen a real comedy show.
Right.
Because what I say now, we have the one bit wonder. I mean, that's what YouTube created. YouTube created the one-bit wonder in comedy, just like there was the one-hit wonders on radio in the 70s and 80s.
Yep.
There's the one-bit wonder now. And people go to the whole 45-minute show to see that bit, that 5 minutes, and then they go home and they're happy. And then they come see us do it, and they're like, oh, shit, you were funny for the whole 45 minutes. Like, we didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is that what?
I've had people go, I had some people go, I laughed the whole time. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, no, really?
This is another thing I want to touch on real quick is that, I mean, like, I talk a lot on my podcast all the time about sex and deviant shit. You know, I'm a fucking food addict, alcoholic, drug addict, sex addict. I'm a fucking mess with all this shit, and I've used it in my whole life to actually, you know, help. That's my what I deal with, you know. But, you know, you're not really you're not like a deviant. I never hear you talk about sex. I don't hear you occasionally about a chick, you know, whatever, nice, you know, she's hot or whatever, but you're not this guy who, you know, I'd love to stick it in her asshole, or I don't hear you talking about, like, I can't even imagine you jerking off
you
or
know
watching
what it
porn.
Is? You know what it is? I did all that. I'm retired. I mean, I joke about it. For one thing, I'm older than everybody thinks. I just turned 49.
Really?
Yeah, I turned 49 last month.
Fucking black
so
don't crack, motherfucker.
I'm 10 months away from AARP. All right, I'm 10 months from my AARP card. I've been sober 23 years, man. I did the alcohol, cocaine, crack. I did all of that shit
hookers,
in the
80s. Hookers?
Yeah, in the 80s was when I did that shit, right? So when I gave it up in 88, when I got sober, and I've been sober since, I'm not like a reformer, like I'm running around saying, hey, Bobby, don't do this. Or so like, I don't give a shit what people do. Go have fun. Do what you want to do. I'm like, I did it. I had fun. Like you want to get loaded? Really? I used to smoke crack. You want to go smoke some crack? No, I didn't think
so. You smoked
so. Like,
crack?
Yeah, I smoked crack for the last 2 years of my using. You know, I lived 20 bucks at a time chasing the hit.
Really?
Yeah. So.
The fuck didn't we talk about this? We did an hour podcast on the behind the scenes of Last Comic Standing, which you've done. Yeah, I didn't know you
smoked. We'll do this again.
You smoked fucking crack.
Yeah, that's where I bottomed, and that's how I got sober. So, you know, so the whole thing of getting loaded, partying, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
I've been there, done that. When it comes to the women, obviously I love women. I've hooked up with girls. You know, I went through the sex thing. I wouldn't say I went through it to the level of crazy, but, you know, but I've had my share of pussy. Let's put it that way. Right. And like we were talking about, I'm at the point now I could appreciate a real woman in a good relationship, which is obviously hard to find in doing this business.
Right.
Because I travel all the time. But the idea of after show pussy, like I'm so old and tired now. That if I don't, if we don't have a deal going in that I know you're going to leave, it's right. like really I can't be bothered. If I got to pretend that this is going to go, you have to listen
to our hopes and dreams.
Right, it's just you know something yeah. really. Yeah. Thanks, but I, and there's literally been times where a conversation, and this sounds fucking sad as shit, but it's really true. Like hanging out and talking to somebody can be better than fucking them. When you're on a road run, you know what I mean? If it's somebody you can actually have right. a conversation with, you know right. what I'm saying? So yeah, so it's not.
That does sound lonely as
oh,
shit.
Oh, it's fucking sad.
When was the last time you got pussy, dude?
Last time I got pussy was about a week and a half ago.
Now, is this just a booty call or, you know, some
yeah,
friend?
It's a friend with benefits situation. Yeah.
So there's a, you just got to, you know, you get a friend that you call up and she's yeah. cool with it. And
yeah, she's cool with it and, you know.
Just bang
we'll
it
hang out.
Out.
Yeah.
Now, do you watch porn? Do you fucking?
Oh yeah, yeah. I like porn.
What's your kind? What yeah. kind of porn do you like?
I'm big tits and milfs.
Big tits and milfs.
Yeah.
Isn't that together anyways?
Yeah, yeah.
Usually they never have milfs with little A cups.
No.
That's young girl.
That's my wheelhouse though. I love the milf.
Yeah.
35 to 45.
White or black or Spanish? What do you like?
Mix them up. Probably blacks and brunettes.
Really?
Premium, yeah.
So if you could have a chick, a girlfriend right now, you could be, what would it be, what would your perfect chick be?
My perfect chick would be 38 to 40 years old, still hot, still hard body. I don't really care what she does for a living outside of being a gold digger.
You don't want a gold digger.
I don't need a gold digger. No. Nah. I don't make enough money to have a gold digger. Yeah, like if I had enough to have a gold digger,
yeah.
you got to be rich enough that her gold digging doesn't affect your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like I'm at the point, if I had a gold digger, yeah. I'd have to cut back on my shit, yeah. which I'm not really up for. You know what I mean?
I could afford a nickel chaser.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. A bronze, yeah. you know, somebody who likes silver.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's why I got a wife.
If she really likes silver, we could probably hang out.
Yeah, my wife, I still make that broad go to work. I feel bad. Yeah. I still make her go to that fucking salon.
You know what's really hot, and I let this one go, but this is what's really fucking awesome, is when she's smarter than you.
Yeah.
Like, I went out with this chick. This chick went to Harvard when she was 16.
Right.
She's like a genius, you know?
Yeah.
And she was a lawyer, and it was like, that's fucking awesome when you're with somebody who's smarter than you.
Oh, fucking! I could date Snooki, and that would be the case. I mean, you know what I mean? But my wife's not a genius, but she knows where a colon goes,
yeah,
and she knows how to spell shit, so she's smarter than me.
We always joke about it and bullshit about it, but the truth is, like every guy, you want the girl that's out of your league, right? You want the one.
No, I don't. No, I don't. No, you're absolutely wrong. That, you know, look at man. In my, you know, I always love a chick with a hot body and a goofy face. I want a chick with a fang tooth, a German Shepherd mole, one eye that's bigger than the other, because I know if I look at your body and I know it's hot, I love that. When that chick is, I'll look at the party and see all the hot chicks and see the guys going for it. And then you'll see that one little straggler fucking doing a crossword puzzle. I'll go up to her and talk to her. And then you get her in the room and you're like, her body is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I banged a chick. She looked like David Letterman. But her fucking body was like Giselle.
Yeah.
You know, so no, I absolutely don't. I mean, I fucking hate hot chicks. I don't like hot chicks. I like unconventionally good looking girls.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I don't know. And it's living in LA. And living in LA, you get so fucked up with what a hot chick is, because like a few years ago when we had that whole thing where women were complaining about the artificial standard of beauty, right? The covers of magazines and shit like that.
Right.
Those chicks live in LA. Like that's, you know, you go to my gym, the artificial standard of beauty is on the treadmill.
Right.
You yeah. know, and there's another one over on the bench press machine, and there's like that's what we have. So LA fucks you up, and then you just like here in Ottawa, like these chicks are hot, but they're real people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not.
They're squares.
Yeah. And in LA, you know, they do exist. The real ones do exist. But so many of them are just like, I'm this hot, but they're so fucked up because that's what they're selling.
Like,
I have to be hotter than the girl next to me, and she's 2 years younger than me, and they're totally fucked up with it.
But here's the thing, okay? Like, it's... I mean, I guess it is because you're older and you're mature. You know, I've been sober, too, for a long time from drugs and alcohol. I haven't been clean off of food and sex. You know, I still have a problem with that, and I envy people that don't have that problems. I envy people that can just shut
I obviously
down.
Got issues, man. I'm 49. I never been married.
Yeah.
So.
You had this, dude, there's something up with, you know what I mean? There's something.
Yeah, there's
you got, because you're a smart guy, highly intelligent. People don't know this. You're really highly intelligent. You've had crazy jobs. You worked for
Lockheed and aerospace companies.
Dude, you're fucking motorcycles. You're into motorcycles. You're like this. You're almost like this. Fucking. You're almost European. You're very European. You're European black. That's what I would say about you.
I am.
You're not American black.
Belgian.
Yeah, you're Belgian black.
But, and we're not actually black. We're brown. Hence the brownie. Yes, Belgian chocolate
and
leads
we bring
to brownies.
It full circle. But here's the thing: is you know, like since I've been here, I've jerked off twice. Okay.
You got me beat by one.
Okay, so I got you beat by one. But what I jerked off to, I've got you beat by 20. There's no way you jerked off to whatever I jerked off to. But you never talk about. You're not a dirty guy. You're not a crass guy. You're very. We've been walking and talking for days, hanging out for days, and the conversation is very analytical and psychological and funny. And you know, you're funny and stuff like that. But it's never gone to that where I, you know, a lot of times it usually goes, you know, fucking pussy or fucking.
Yeah.
We really. So I was just wondering that. I'm sitting.
But
there.
See, but it's the same way with you, right? Because even though we've known each other for a long time, this is the first time we've really just hung out,
right?
It's you and me, right? So you being married, and there I go cock blocking again.
Oh, you cock blocked me the other night.
But you didn't talk pussy, so I figured, okay, he's a married guy who's not looking at every chick that walks by, because I'm checking out, you know, there's bodies up here.
I don't give a fuck.
And this and that, right? So but since we didn't talk about it, I'm thinking to myself, because some, you know, some married guys have like shut down to outside pussy, right? Like they don't talk about it. They don't notice it. They don't whatever. So I think we're both seeing pussy. We're just not talking about it.
I think there's nothing worse than a married guy who walks around and go, look at that fucking bitch. I fuck her. Hey, fucking, you know, even if you're going to do that, if you're going to fuck around on your wife, that's fine. Go do your thing. But be subtle, man.
Yeah.
Have some, because I don't want to ever meet
respect.
Your wife
right.
and have to look at her and go, I just, you know, you know, let me live the lie too. Don't make me, you know. I don't want to be part of your shit. I look at chicks. I check chicks out. But that's one of the best parts about being married and trying to deal with your sex addiction is that you can finally walk down the street and not want to fuck. Who fuck that? Who cares? You can just go and not look at every fucking piece of ass that might be a chick that you could fuck and have some type of fantasy relationship with.
And the thing about being a veteran is you look at that pussy and you're like, man, what's that going to cost me?
Yeah.
On the backside.
Yep.
You know, on the back, is this going to be endless phone calls? Is this going to be this, that, or the other? What, you see? That's what I'm saying. So it's like, man, this pussy, you got to pay for this shit.
Well, that's what, I mean, I found out what a relationship is. It's compatibility. If you're going to be, if you be with somebody, it's not about the more so the love or how much you love each other. That's going to go up and down, just like your career.
Yeah.
But compatibility, and you're not compatible with everybody. You can't spend more than 3 hours with most people without
going,
get the fuck out of here.
It's hard to find, man. It's hard to find, especially when I'm not the naturally social life of the part. Like, I'm so used to being alone, and I'm so comfortable with it.
Right.
It's like the idea of, okay, if we're going to be together, if we're going to be in each other's space, you got to understand that sometimes that's going to be very quiet.
Right.
You know, or I'm just not going to want to be there. And like, if I don't want to be there, like you talk about the bikes, man, my biggest escape is when I'm alone in my helmet on a motorcycle.
And you got fucking fast bikes. You're not talking.
Yeah. I get Ducatis and you get into the canyons, you're 20 minutes out of LA and you're in a completely different world. And I'm good with that. Like I had this one girl and she got it that whenever I got home from the road, I had to go for a ride. Like, that was my decompress. Like, look, I got to get on a bike. I got to just fucking
right.
go for a ride and then come back and then I'm good. And she got that. But she had a hard time with, and this, because this was like right after Last Comic. And, you know, and I can't blame her. I mean, I was gone 6 days a week, and well, the seventh day I was fucking exhausted.
Well, I tell you this, is that we live a close life to like professional wrestlers. You know, where they're on every week, they're yeah. somewhere else. And it's a sacrifice that whoever is in your life has to fucking be cool with that. Me and my wife, and the more you get into your career, and the more, you know, the more, you know, time you put in, and you know you make your money, you can actually say, look, I'm taking a month off, or we're going out, we're going to spend time together.
I'm learning more and more about that now, and I'm doing it more.
I had to do off. That. I had to, in the last year, and it started, this is where it started. I went away with my friends, my comic friends, me, Patrice, Norton, and, you know, these guys. We went to Brazil, which was not good, but this was years ago. But we went away on vacation together for 2 weeks. And I was like, comics don't do this.
No.
We should do this. We should go and hang out and not do comedy and live life and be happy. And that's when I, you know, when I got my shit together with my wife, it was like, I'm going to go and hang out with my wife or go on vacation and do things with my chick and take time off. I don't work Sundays. I don't usually don't work Mondays. Those are my times
that's,
to be
it's
human.
It's so funny you mention that, because I've gotten to that too, where I'm conditioned to those being nights off. Like, once in a while I'll do a Sunday or a Monday show. Like, there was a really hot Monday night show in LA that Jamie Foxx was producing with the Foxhole and all of that.
Right.
And people like, man, you need to come down. And I'm like, man, I can't even get my mind around working on Monday night.
Right. Yeah.
Like, Monday night, I'm not even, you know.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you talked about being happy. I think that's a tough thing. Like, to decide you're going to be happy at whatever level you are.
Yes.
Is a tough one, because it's always like, well, what about this? Or I want that. And you got to find that line. Like, how do you allow myself to enjoy where I'm at, because I'm doing pretty good. You know, it's not like I'm struggling. I mean,
yeah.
I'm secure financially. I got some toys, the
yeah.
bikes and shit like that, and I have a life to be enjoyed.
Fuck yeah!
But you have to, and it sounds your listeners are like, listen, you fucking assholes, you're whining. You do jokes for a half hour a day or something, but it really is it's a mental thing to decide to enjoy where you're at.
Yeah, It's I've learned to do that in the last couple of years, and it's all about the work too. I mean, you know, you got work to do. This is our job. We have to do it. We have to write. We have to try to become better. But also, we're in Ottawa. We're in a fucking fancy hotel. We're getting paid to tell jokes. We work for an hour a night, or 40 minutes a night, and we get to hang out and go get food and shoot the shit. It is an amazing job.
Oh, and I love it. You know, even at its worst, it's still great. You
right.
know, and so I'm never not grateful for that. And especially since I worked in the real world. Like,
ugh.
It's funny when you talk to people who work it, especially on TVs and movie sets. I remember when I used to work on Power Rangers, I was a truck driver for the show, right? And I ended up doing voices, but it was fun. But, you know, when you're on set, they feed you breakfast, they feed you lunch, there's always food, this and that. And I'd hear people complain, and one time I said, you know, in the real world, you have to buy your meals.
Yeah.
You know, like these people have no comprehension of that. Like, you know, 99% of the people who go to work have to eat breakfast at home and then buy lunch somewhere. They don't have a caterer saying, what do you want?
Yeah, take
like,
some.
Do you know what a huge fucking benefit just that is?
It's
forget
amazing.
About everything else. Just the fact that,
fucking amazing.
You know, I'm hungry. Where's the food?
So check this out. We got your website is alonzolive.com.
Yes.
You can check your website for that for all your tour dates. I believe you're heading to Denver. You're
Denver
gonna be in
this
Montreal.
Week, Indy next week, and then Montreal.
Yep. And your Twitter is Alonzo Bowden. At Alonzo
right.
Bowden. You want to check it out. Again, mine at Robert Kelly. Make sure you do all the crazy shit. For this podcast, spread the word about it. Alonzo, we do a little quick thing at the end about tech. I don't know, you're into tech. You like gadgets.
I like gadgets.
And I do a little quick thing. One thing I'm going to talk about, and then you can actually say something that you like. I talked about it on the other one. It's a new bag I got from BBP Bags. Unbelievable fucking travel bag. It's a hybrid backpack over the shoulder, handheld fucking bag, a million pockets. This is the first weekend I've used it in Ottawa. Going through security was a fucking breeze. I packed it with all my podcast shit, my MacBook 15 inch, my iPad, my iPad case, all my gadget wires, everything. And, you know, it was heavy as shit. I put it on the backpack, but it hangs it on your ass, not on your back. It hangs it on your butt. It hangs down a little lower, so I didn't even feel it. And the going through security was the shit, because the computer slot is in the back. So you put your iPad and my computer right in the back, one zipper, waterproof bag. You can be out in the rain with it. You don't have to worry about your shit getting fucked up. Right through security. It was fucking amazing. So bbpbags.com. Check those people out. They're fucking great. And
well, I'm an Apple junkie like you, and right? We've been talking about it. My thing is the next generation iPhone, and because I'm still with a 3GS and the camera sucks,
right?
But I hate carrying a separate digital camera. You know what I mean? Like, you want a phone that can do everything. So yeah. I still have shitty iPhone pictures.
Right.
Because I don't want to buy the 4 when the 5 is coming out in, what, right, 3 months or some shit like that. So
You said what are some of the stats that are coming out on the iPhone?
It's supposed to be an 8 megapixel camera. That's the one. That's the thing I saw that I'm like, I can't wait. I'm all over it.
Right.
You know, so I'm in that tech limbo,
right,
where you know there's better shit, but it's like, I got to wait. So, yep.
Which is Apple is fucking great at.
Yeah, Apple. Well, you know what's funny? Apple and Ducati, and they're both based in Cupertino, California. They're like literally down the street from each other.
Right.
And they both work you the same way. It's like, yeah, this bike's nice, but look at this shit we're coming out with next year.
Yeah.
Next year we're adding traction control, or next year we're adding 10 more horse. And with a motorcycle, it's the same thing. Even though I can't ride last year's bike at the maximum, I want next year's bike.
Right.
You know what I mean? Wow. And I did. I just bought a new Ducati this year. It's called the DFL. So that's my latest tech toy is my new Duck, which is fucking an amazing bike.
I had a Vespa. I don't know if you know. I was a fellow rider.
Scooters are cool. I fucking love scooters. I rent scooters when I go to the islands, and I just buzz bomb around. And the thing is, I weigh 100 pounds more than the scooter.
Yeah. I wish I could say that. All right, dude. Well, dude, really, Alonzo, you've been a friend for a long time. I'm glad I got you on this, you know, watching, you know, your career and all that shit happening and, you know, finding out.
And the next one, we'll do drugs and degenerates.
We're going to talk about the drug days.
We'll talk about the drug days and since then and all the shit that goes on there. Because it's a great perspective, because I didn't start doing comedy till after I was sober.
Yeah.
So
me neither.
So, yeah. Because, you know, if I knew then what I knew now, like if I had walked out of Last Comic Standing directly into rehab, career would have took off.
All right, brother. Go to alonzolive.com for all his tour dates, all his Twitter information, and make sure you spread the word about the podcast. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you later. Thanks again for listening to another episode of You Know What Dude podcast on gloryholeradio.com. And make sure to check out all the other shows on the Glory Hole Network. If you're using the Stitcher app, type in the word fart when you register. iTunes users, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. If you're a real fan of the show and you want to show your support, go to gloryholeradio.com/Robert Kelly and hit the donate button. $10 will get you a shout out on the air. $20 will get you my first CD, Robert Kelly Live, not available in stores. If you have any questions, email me at robertkelly@gloryholeradio.com.